So it works. Thank you. I love hearing those stories because it reminds me that, you know, the choice to follow Jesus is a choice that needs to be chosen. It's something we actually have to say yes to. And there's a moment where we have to choose, as Thomas said, to learn to let go, to release control and let go of control. And every single one of us has those moments and those opportunities. And so if you have been facing those moments, if you've been making that choice, if that's a choice you want to make, I'd love to hear from you. I'd love to talk to you more. And as Ben said, we'd love to celebrate that with you as well. So, but like Ben said, my name is Scott Pontier. I'm the lead pastor here. And if you have a Bible and you want to follow along with us today, we're going to be in the book of Daniel, chapter 1. It's in the Old Testament. I'll also throw it up on the screen here. But we've been in this series that we've called Exiles. And there's one really great, simple definition of exiles that I've heard. And I'm going to move to the least squeaky side of this, because I move around and you're just going to have to deal with that. But the best kind of like definition of the word exile I've heard is an exile is a person who finds himself far from home. An exile is a person who finds himself far from home. And maybe you've felt far from home in your life. Maybe you've felt spiritually far from home. Maybe you've felt emotionally far from home. Maybe you've felt physically far from home, right? But home is this place where we feel safe. It's a place where we feel we belong, where we feel like we know the rules, right? Where we know how to get along and how things tend to work. That's a place where we can most be ourselves, is a place that feels like home. But when we are in exile, we find we tend to have to be someone else. We have to learn the rules of the game. We have a lot of anxiety because there's a lack of clarity. We tend to like grasp for these handles in our world or in our culture so we can feel like stable, right? And I think a lot of us look around and walk around through the world we live in right now, and we would say that it's never felt less stable than it does in my world right now, right? All the anxiety, the lack of clarity, the abundance of information, but the finite amount of truth, right? The punishing presence of constant observation through social media, the never-ending daily political confusion, a constant threat of pandemic or even violence, all of that gets wrapped up into a ball that we call living in the right now. And I don't care if you're 12 years old or 98 years old, it's very clear that you have never experienced anything like the world we live in right now. And it's very easy in this experience to feel like, I just don't feel like I'm at home right now. I feel like an exile. I feel like I'm a person who is far from home. But maybe, just maybe, experiencing this feeling of exile is exactly what is needed for you. Maybe it's exactly what we need to strip away the false sense of home that we've been building around ourselves. That God's saying, like, you know what? That's not actually really it, and there's more for you beside that. And so that, with our series this month around exiles, that's the conversation we're having. That's why we're talking about this, why we're having this conversation. And last week, Ben walked us through the opening seven verses of Daniel chapter 1. And that's where we're going to go back to today. I'm going to just reframe us with the first couple of verses. This is Daniel 1, verses 1 and 2. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. So there's a king in Judah, in Israel. His name is Jehoiakim. And then there's a king in Babylon. His name is Nebuchadnezzar. And Nebuchadnezzar comes and he besieges Israel. And the Lord delivered Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, along with some of the articles from the temple of God. These he carried off to the temple of his God in Babylonia and put in the treasure house of his God. Now, the oversimplified story of Daniel is really the story of four friends. Four young men who are captured in this siege. Captured and taken away from their home in Jerusalem and taken away to Babylon. And this is an event, as the whole nation experiences what these four friends experience. It's an event called the Babylonian exile. And second to the Exodus story where they cross the Red Sea, right, in the Old Testament, there is no greater event that has shaped the identity of the people of God. There is no greater event at this point in time that really is shaped the old, what we know as the Old Testament, than the Babylonian exile. In fact, up until this time, most of the stories of God that these people celebrate were not written down. They were not written in books and passed through their libraries. The dominant way to pass on these stories and to pass on their faith from generation to generation was to sit around the campfire and tell stories. And so they would tell these stories to their children and to each other. For 2,000 years, they would tell these stories. That's basically what they had, families that would gather and share the story of their faith. But then this moment happens. This Babylonian exile happened where parts of the temple and the whole nation was carted off out of the promised land. And the religious leaders decide we should write some of this stuff down because you know what? We are in danger of an entire generation passing away because of this exile. So there was this fear that the Babylonian exile would wipe out their stories. And so they spent a lot of time writing down what we know as the Old Testament. So you can actually read so much of the Old Testament through a lens of people who are feeling this exile feeling that you and I might be connected with today. And much, especially the second half of the Old Testament was written down in this way, but we're going to focus on this book of Daniel because Daniel is a first-person account of a young man. It is his story. A young man and his three friends who are kidnapped and captured and taken to Babylon. And at this point, Ben talked a lot last week, and if you haven't listened, I'd encourage you to go back and listen to that sermon. But he talked a lot about what it feels like when you move into this foreign land, right? When you're far from home. In Babylon, they would walk you through this huge, impressive gate that really told you you weren't in Kansas anymore and you better get with the program. They wanted you to know this is the most powerful place on earth, right? They would change your name and seek to change your identity to say, get with our program. Because when you're far from home, it's really, really easy to become something and someone else. The culture challenges you to conform to their way of living, to something new, to shed your individual self. And sometimes when we find ourselves far from home, we lose ourselves. We lose the things that actually really matter most to us. In fact, sometimes we go far from home so that we can change ourselves, right? The college student who goes off to college out of state because she just wants a chance to reinvent herself, right? Or I had a friend who lived his whole life in this community. When he was like 35, 40 years old, he packed up his family and moved to Texas because he said, you know what? I just had to get out of that bubble. I didn't like the person I was. I needed to become somebody new. And to do that, I had to go. I had to leave. I had to exile myself, right? So that's both the opportunity of exile. We can self-impose exile to make a change in who we are. But it's also the danger of exile. The danger of exile is that we lose ourselves to become someone who we never wanted to be in the first place. So how do you keep from losing yourself when you are far from home? That's sort of the question I'm pulling at today. How do you keep from getting lost when you are in exile? How do you keep from losing yourself? In Daniel's case, how do you hold on to your convictions? Your way of life, the values you brought with you from Israel, the way of living. More importantly, how do you hold on to your faith when the culture around you is constantly pushing you to get rid of it and to change it? And interestingly, Daniel shows us some really interesting ways to do that I think wouldn't come to us naturally. So to get at that question, let's go to verse 3 in Daniel chapter 1. This sort of sets us up. Then the king ordered Ashpenaz, the chief of his court officials, to bring into the king's service some of the Israelites from the royal family and the nobility. So what the king does is he grabs some young men, Daniel and his three friends in particular, young men that he can win over, because he believed that if he could win over these young men, the culture would start to change. Because they would lead the rest of the people around them. They would be influencers to the community around them. And over time, if the king could turn these people, the whole community would follow. I was in youth ministry for like 15 years before I was a pastor. And this is a tactic. It's a strategy that we call the key kid principle. We don't it doesn't really get used anymore, but it used to get used a lot. And the simple idea was that if you could win the captain of the football team, you could earn credibility with the rest of the football team. If you could get the head cheerleader to start following Jesus, she would influence the rest of the cheerleading squad, right? That's the idea, right? That's, again, we don't use that so much anymore, but that's what the king of Babylon was doing. And then in verse 5, you start to see part of his strategy. The king assigned them a daily amount of food and wine from the king's table. They were to be trained for 3 years, and after that, they were to enter the king's service. Okay, so last week, as you might have heard, part of the strategy was we're going to change your name. We're going to change your clothes. And then, as we see here, we're going to give you 3 years of studying at the king's table. 3 years of listening to how great Babylon is and learn all the ways of how they do life there and how they do culture there. It's indoctrination. It's brainwashing. You're going to sit at the king's table every single day for 3 years, and that's how that's going to happen. And then a couple of verses later in verse 8, you see Daniel's response. But Daniel resolved not to defile himself with the royal food and wine. And he asked the chief official for permission not to defile himself in this ways. So of all the ways Daniel could fight indoctrination, right? Of Daniel could avoid this brainwashing. Of all the ways he could fight to not lose himself in the midst of this exile, he chooses not to eat food? Like, that's kind of interesting to me. It's a really odd place to draw the line. Because you're going to submit yourself to 3 years of studying the greatness of Babylon, right? You're going to let them change your name. You're going to wear their clothes. But the food, that's where I'm going to draw the line. It's very interesting to me. And I think part of the reason Daniel does that is because he was resolved to keep God's law even when he wasn't in God's kingdom. Because you see, Daniel knew the law that his family had passed down for generations, this idea that we refer to as the Mosaic Law, the laws of Moses, in particular the book of Leviticus. Right? The book of Leviticus contains really practical ways of living, guidelines for personal and public health. It's interesting, you would wonder how the Bible might speak today in our conversation around public health, but Leviticus was all about public health. Now, we should be lucky that we just have to wear a mask instead of like be banished to the outside of the camp, right? But that's what's happening in Leviticus. And Leviticus is all about, here's how we create a good health amongst our community, right? And it included very specific laws about food, specific instructions about what to eat and what not to eat and how to prepare it. For instance, they couldn't eat camels, rabbits, pig, shellfish, birds of prey that included ravens, owls, swans, which was a delicacy in Babylon, pelicans, storks, bats. Now, you're listening to this and you're like, it's probably good that you don't eat bats, right? Like, that makes sense. In fact, out of all those things, maybe like pig is the only one you've got a problem with. But it wasn't just about what you could eat and couldn't eat. It was also about how you prepared it, right? All the blood had to be drained from the animal before you could eat it. I don't know if you've ever heard of kosher in the Jewish community. That's part of what it means to be kosher. No blood. Leviticus says if you eat the blood, you can be banished from the camp. Because Leviticus tells us the life of the flesh is in the blood. So that's like their world, their culture. But other cultures don't have these rules, don't have these restrictions. They live differently. And certainly the king of Babylon would have included, like his table would have included lots of meat. And even though Daniel might have been able to eat some of it, beef was okay, he had no idea how they were preparing it. And for sure they weren't preparing it according to Jewish kosher laws. In fact, they love blood in their menu. According to Old Testament scholar Robert Wilson, it was considered a delicacy to mix blood of the animal with wine, which I know you think is like gross, but steak that was rare along with a glass of wine, we kind of get that. But whatever he's thinking, Daniel is not interested in changing the way he eats while he's here in Babylon. This is where his culture is clashing with the culture that he is in. This is where he feels the feeling of exile. He stands out. He doesn't feel at home. This is where he's experiencing a conflict of his conviction. I wonder what feels like conviction to you, right? Or where you might have experienced conflict of conviction. Maybe you set a culture with your kids for your daughters and how they dress when they're out in the world. And yet when they experience a certain group of friends, that culture, those values are different and there's a clash and you'd feel that conflict. Or maybe you're sending your kid off to college for the first time and you hope that she's making decisions that keep her safe and uphold the values of your family. And you're like, where's that line of our convictions? Or maybe your new job brings so many good things into your life and in your family, but you have this value of being present and spending time and investing in your kids and in your marriage, but now this job is taking so much of that time. Where's your line for your convictions of your values? We have lines, don't we? We have convictions. And when we're exiles, when we're far from home, those convictions get challenged really quickly. So how do we hold on to that? Actually, notice two things and how Daniel explores this conviction of his food that might give us some guidance. And one we've already said, it's back in verse 8, it's one really important word. Daniel resolved not to defile himself with the food and the wine. That word is really important to me. Daniel resolved. Because I'll be honest with you, it seems really crazy to me that this is the place where he puts his foot down. I like food, what can I say? But he resolved. I mean, I can think of a dozen excuses why Daniel could say, this is okay for me to eat. First of which being, I don't want to die. I don't want the king to kill me. But, you know, also, mom and dad aren't here. Who's going to know? Or maybe this isn't Israel. The laws of Israel don't apply in Babylon. Or maybe if I don't participate, I'll stand out and they'll think I'm weird and that'll be bad for me. Or it's an order for the king. God wants us to follow the leader, right? So how do I respect the authority of the king? Or maybe I know it's wrong, but God will probably forgive me. He loves me after all, right? So let's be clear. I think there are compelling reasons for Daniel to not follow these dietary restrictions. And especially because on its own, the food's not going to make Daniel a bad person. But he doesn't. He draws the line right here. Because I think he knows that the challenge he's facing isn't the act of eating food. I think Daniel feels like that's not actually my problem. I think he knows that participating in this way would make me just like everybody else. It would make me just like everybody else in my brainwashing program. It would mean submission to a king who isn't the Lord. And it might actually for him, because you eat so often, create a pattern in his life. As he submits these little things to Babylon, soon he would submit everything to Babylon. It's like he's seeing the roadmap of his life, and he says, you know what, this intersection is really going to lead me to a place I don't want to go. And I think that's a key learning for me in this story, is that the Bible uses this word resolved. Daniel resolved. Which means Daniel made the food decision one single time. He made this decision one time before he was ever served a plate. He decided what he was going to do, right? He didn't make that decision about the food three times a day. He made it once. And I don't know about you, but I think we live in a world where it's really, really easy and normal for us to make last-minute decisions, right? Simple things like, well, let's just meet at 7 o'clock, and I'm going to text you where I'll be, and then you can find me, right? We just live in a world where it's super easy to just make last-minute decisions. We're in a world of last-minute decisions, but that's not how Daniel approaches his convictions, right? He makes a long-term decision, and he makes it ahead of time. He says, if I want to stay within my boundaries, if I don't want to cross my line, then I'm going to decide ahead of time how I'm going to engage with this world around me. There's a friend of mine this week who was making fun of me because I don't use like auto deduct for my bills, for most of my bills. I don't do that. And he was incredulous. He's like, you're telling me that every month you log onto that website and you make that same payment again and again and again, and you just do that every month. He says, I don't know anybody who does that. Which I was incredulous to hear that it was that big of a deal. I had no idea like online bill paying shaming was a thing, but here I was, right? And I said, well, you know, like, honestly, like, my wife and I, we went to a Dave Ramsey class 13 years ago. And one of the things I remember him saying is, you're in charge of every one of your dollars. You tell your dollars where to go, right? And I'm like, all right, so that's what I'm going to do. So I was in charge of my dollars. I'm going to tell it where it leaves from my bank account somewhere else and when. It's not going to just do that on its own. Verizon's not in charge of my dollars. I am. So many of us make a budget for decisions about our dollars, right? We have a plan on how to spend our money. Few of us make a plan for our decisions and how we're going to make them in the rest of our life. But that's what Daniel was doing. He's like, I'm resolved. I'm making a plan for this decision. Daniel knows himself. He's done the work to get really clear on what matters to him and why it matters and how these decisions are going to affect the rest of his life. And I think for some of us, we are not that clear on what matters to us. We are not that clear on how we follow God in our lives. What are my convictions in the first place? But the time to make that decision is not when you're seated at the king's table far from home in exile. For many of us, the anxiety we feel right now in a culture that feels like an exile is because we didn't do the work to define how we were going to follow God before any of this happened. And now here we are. Okay, so that's a really long walk for one verse in verse 8. I want to get to the rest of the story, back to verse 8 in Daniel chapter 1. But Daniel resolved not to defile himself with the royal food and wine, and he asked the chief official for permission not to defy himself in this way. Now God had caused the official to show favor and compassion to Daniel, but the official told Daniel, I am afraid of my lord the king, who has assigned your food and drink. Why should he see you looking worse than the other men your age? The king would have my head because of you. Daniel then said to the guard, whom the chief official had appointed over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, please test your servants for 10 days. Give us nothing but vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then compare our appearance with that of the young men who eat at the royal food, and treat your servants in accordance with what you see. So he agreed to this test and tested them for 10 days. At the end of 10 days, they looked healthier and better nourished than any of the young men who ate the royal food. So the guard took away their choice food and the wine that they were to drink and gave them vegetables instead. Now, the Sunday school oversimplification version of this story is one that says Daniel was so strong in his faith. He was so clear in his convictions and his boundaries that he put his foot down and stubbornly stuck to his guns and he won. Like, that's the simple version, that he was right, he was the winner, his team won, his ideals overcame the bad guys, right? That is the simple version of the story, but it is not the point of this story. Because this is not a story about Daniel being right. This is a story about Daniel being in one particular relationship with the chief royal official who's overseeing Daniel's indoctrination, his enemy that he sees every day. It's not a story about Daniel being right. It's about Daniel being in a relationship with this guy. Daniel comes in with a resolve around his convictions. He's strong in them. He's convicted. He knows where his line is. He's very sure. And how does he bring those convictions to the table? With picket signs or protests or Facebook posts? No. With permission. Instead of protesting or posting or picketing, he asks for permission. He asks the chief official for permission to practice his convictions. When was the last time you asked the other person in your argument if it was okay for you to think and believe and live the way you want? I don't live in that world, right? Now, it wasn't a trick. It wasn't a tactic. It wasn't Daniel taking the high road or having like a high moral ground at all. Like, we quickly see in the story why he decides to go this route. Because if Daniel and his friends go on this hunger strike only to eat their veggies, they're going to lose weight. And what's the king going to do when he sees that these guys under his charge are looking weak and not eating the food? This guy's life is at stake. Daniel holds this guy's life in the palm of his hand by the choices he's going to make. And you know what? Daniel cares more about that than he cares about his own convictions. Daniel's like, it's not important enough for me to draw a line in the sand if you have to pay the punishment for it. He's not so much interested in being right as he is interested in maintaining a relationship with this guy, ensuring his safety, even at the expense of his holiness, right? And because of Daniel's humility and his respectful and his reasonable approaches at like connection with this guy, they strike a deal. You know what? Let's just try it out for a few days, right? I use this on my kids all the time. I'm like, well, let's just try it out and see if dad's right, because dad knows he's right, right? He says, let's keep trying it. Let's just try it. And if it works out, then we keep going. And if it doesn't, we'll figure something else out. But you and me, we're in it together. No arguing, no screaming, humility and genuine care for the other person. Daniel did not have to compromise his faith at all in order to love his enemy in this situation. But I wonder why it is that we so often feel like we do. I don't know, maybe you've heard this quote. It's often attributed to St. Augustine. Essentials in unity. In essentials unity. In non-essentials liberty. In all things charity. Basically what this means is that we agree on what is essential and what isn't. And on those things that are essential, like we do those together, on the things that aren't, you've got the liberty, the freedom to kind of do your own thing, to believe your own thing. But we're going to agree on what those things are. And on everything else, on the things in which we do not agree, charity, there's grace, there's love. And I'll tell you what, charity is where the hard work is. It's easy to be unified on what we agree on. But it's hard to be gracious when we fundamentally disagree, isn't it? Jesus says this in Matthew, verse 5, but I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, that you may be children of your Father in heaven. He causes the sun to rise on the evil and the good and sends the rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. If you love those who love you, what reward will you get? Are not even the tax collectors doing that? And if you greet only your own people, what are you doing more than others? Don't even pagans do that? Loving who you agree with doesn't really get you anywhere, is what Jesus says. He's like, that's not actually the kingdom. When that happens, being united around the things we all agree on, he's like, that's not the kingdom. Loving your enemy, that's the kingdom. And that is exactly how Daniel holds on to his convictions. He's like, I've got these convictions. How do I hold them? Well, with love for my enemy, with great gentleness and humility. So when you find yourselves far from home, when you find yourselves feeling like you're in exile and I just don't fit and the lay of the land is causing me anxiety, how do you hold on to who you are? Well, first, Daniel knows who he is. He's done the work to resolve about who he is and what matters and where his choices might lead him. He's in touch with his convictions. He's in touch with what matters to him. He knows that simple choices open the door for bigger disappointments. He knows who he is. It's the first thing I see about Daniel. And second is he makes sure that that does not get in the way of how he loves his enemy. He holds his convictions in a way that allows him to be gracious and love those who disagree with him. That's what we learn from Daniel. When you are in exile, how do you hold your convictions in this way? So here's some homework for today. First, do you understand how God has shaped you? Do you understand what triggers you? What leads you to sin eventually? Do you know where you're prone to compromise and what choices might seem simple today but turn into something bigger that could ruin you later? I think most of our life is figuring out how we work. And how we work with what God's calling us to and how God's wired us is a really important work. So do you know where you stand and why? I watched a little bit of the debate this week, the presidential debate with my son. And while we were kind of watching that, he's asking me some questions. And he says, I just want to make up my mind for myself. I don't want to like this guy because you like him. Perfect. I want that. I want you to know who you are. I want you to understand, do the work of where understanding where you stand. So that's our first bit of homework. Do you understand how God has shaped you and where that leads you? And by the way, I'd encourage you not to do that work alone. Bring a friend, bring a spouse, bring a spiritual director, bring a counselor along on that journey with you. Help you discern not just your own convictions, but the rule of life that sort of guides how you approach the world around you. Do the work to understand where you stand. That's the first thing. Second, this is the harder piece of the, there's an inward homework, there's an outward homework. The outward one's always harder, right? Identify an enemy or a person of conflict that God has in your life, that God has placed in your life. And pursue them with love this week. Find a way to actually pursue that person of conflict. We often talk about a person of peace, but you also have people of conflict. Identify one person of conflict and send them a text of encouragement. Sit at their lunch table. Pray for them at the bare minimum. Ask God to show you what could happen if you pursued them with the same kind of consideration that Daniel pursues his enemy. So do the work to understand where you stand. And then do the work to find a particular person of conflict that you can approach with love and grace this week. Because if we're going to be people who live in exile, and in one way or another, I feel like we're all learning to live in a world that doesn't necessarily match 100% who we are. That's what it means to be in exile. Within our exile, my hope is that we may become people who are truly in touch with our own convictions, and that way we may use those to love our enemies instead of defeat them. So that's my hope this week. Would you pray with me? Lord Jesus Christ, I confess that it is not a simple thing to hold on to our convictions and who we are in the midst of exile experiences. And God, I know personally that the world has felt very much like a place that isn't my home. And God, there are lots of reasons for that. And God, I trust and believe that you are at work in all of that. But I also want you to be at work in me in the midst of that. I want you to be at work in us, that we may be a church that holds its convictions in such a way that our enemies find grace and love. God, I pray that you tear down the walls that exist between people. God, I pray that you give us ears to see, or eyes to see and ears to hear ways in which we may follow your Spirit in the work between disagreements. God, I pray that you help us know who we are. May we be in touch with how you've shaped us and called us. And God, may we also find new ways to love our enemies and bless those who persecute us. And we pray all these things in Jesus' name. Amen.